I am so pleased to have somebody who is has a lot of expertise, and just in the conversations we've had so far, has presented this subject matter in the most consumer-friendly way that I have seen. And that's been a challenge, because if there's anything about healthcare reform, many people would accuse us of having information overload on it, and too much information, and too many hype comments, and too many sound bites. But Alan Waring is here, and Alan is Sales and Marketing Director of Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin. And he's been with Group Health Cooperative about 5 years, but he has a long and illustrious career in the health insurance industry in the state of Wisconsin. For over 30 years, he has seen significant changes in the industry through his position at Blue Cross and Blue Shield United of Wisconsin. He was headquartered in Milwaukee, and since then has made the change, moved to Madison, and you're very pleased with that move, I understand, Al.
Oh, absolutely. I'm moving to Group Health Cooperative with the philosophy they have in terms of taking care of patients was really the motivation for me, and it worked out very well. Thank you.
Well, Group Health Cooperative, speaking of their reputation, they have just been cited again for another award. They've been recognized for two high standards of quality and innovation. And this is a reoccurring award. This is, what, the sixth year in a row that they've received this award? And they are amongst the highest ranking in quality among all managed healthcare organizations in Wisconsin and the seventh ranking in the United States. That's pretty heady stuff. What does that mean?
Well, actually, it is heady stuff. That's very well put. The fact is, there's a national firm referred to as a National Committee on Quality Assurance, which evaluates all health plans across the country in terms of how well they deliver care, in terms of their follow-up with their patients, and essentially measuring outcomes. And Group Health Cooperative has a tradition, and it's 35 years, to do what's really best for our members. That's maybe the value of being a cooperative, where our members are our owners. So we have an obligation to take care of our members, and we structured all of our programs to reflect that. One thing you might find interesting in when you think of quality care, the top six carriers in the country are all such as Harvard Pilgrim and Tufts, and really very well-renowned organizations, mostly on the East Coast. And we stick out like a little bit of a sore thumb in a positive way, here in Madison, that we have such, we can deliver that level of care that's equivalent to what they're getting in some of the eastern areas of the country where it's a strong emphasis on delivering quality care.
And what's interesting, too, you've just been listed in the top 100 of the Information Week 500, a prestigious list of companies showing innovations in IT. So you're high tech too.
Absolutely. In fact, that's an interesting award because we've just this is the second year rolling at. We just hit that list last year, and quite frankly, what we've done is we installed electronic medical records, which is the buzz of the medical community, 10 years ago already. You know, we have this wonderful campus down in Verona called Epic. When they first started, we were one of the first health plans and medical delivery systems to go on Epic. And what happens is that gives us a tremendous lead on everybody in terms of using the electronic medical record to its most advantageous for our patients. But also, it gets us these great awards on Information Week. I mean, we're ahead of Federal Express and some really large companies when our IT, when our CIO came back from the seminar where that was done. You know, it was amazing the types of companies that are below us. We're actually quite amazed ourselves. Almost like we didn't expect that one. But the fact is, when you incorporate fully electronic medical records into everything you do, you are totally dependent on your IT and electronic information. We don't have paper files in our organization anywhere. It's all on the computer.
And so hopefully there's no computer breakdown, but what it is easy access when you need it. So if you need some information about a patient instantly, you should be able to access it, and anybody in your organization should be able to access who might need
correct.
It.
And that is correct. And one of the most, probably the most reasons part of that award is there's something here in Madison, which is unique, called Care Everywhere, where in each one of the emergency rooms in town, you can call up a record of a patient, if it's not your patient, to see where it is. So you don't duplicate tests. You can know where they are on their meds right now. And actually, it's been a great benefit. And that was one of the components of the award, the grant. We kind of wrote it like a grant to get the award. That was in there because we were one of the sponsors of Care Everywhere and we're the first to be ready to do it.
And it's interesting that some of these characteristics of group health cooperative of South Central Wisconsin that you've incorporated in the IT and the patient care and not duplication of services and procedures, all of these are components that are built into the healthcare reform legislation in some way. And so you have patterned your organization and around what the healthcare reform legislation is, but you did that before the legislation was passed. This is just part of the philosophy, your way of doing business. Is that right?
Which is the reason why when Larry Zanoni, our CEO, and myself are around town, we have been strongly advocating in favor for many of the principles of healthcare reform. We think there's a lot of good things in there. And so we feel we're prepared, and we think the whole industry should start behaving like we do.
Well, I want to get into that and have you explain in more depth the reasons why you feel that way. And just to set the scene for those people who are not familiar with Group Health Cooperative, South Central Wisconsin, Madison and Wisconsin, we're an island of just remarkable health care. And it's a privilege to have the opportunities to get the good care that we do have from so many different sources in our community. But Group Health Cooperative is a nonprofit healthcare provider headquartered in Madison, but you serve more than 65,000 members in Dane County and South Central Wisconsin. You've got five clinic locations in Madison, Fitchburg, and DeForest, and you do contract with UW Family Practice Clinics, UW Health Clinics, Access Community Health Center Clinics, UW Hospital, St. Mary's, Meritor, and Stoughton Hospitals for the specialty and inpatient care that you do require. So there's a lot of collaboration with the excellence in medical care from all sources that we receive here in this community. And with that said, let's talk about healthcare reform and how the philosophy of Group Health Cooperative is matching some of the provisions of the healthcare reform. What are the basic changes to healthcare under the health reform law, and how have you incorporated this?
First of all, before I even start, I do want to echo what Carol just said. It is very difficult not to find good healthcare in Madison and Dane County. This community is blessed with a lot of great healthcare and opportunities for all of us to take advantage of that. But let me talk a little bit about healthcare reform. There's been a lot of partisan information in the news regarding healthcare reform. And the bottom line is healthcare reform is good social policy. That seems to be missed in many of the things we read in the rhetoric that's out there. But having healthcare reform in this country is a necessity when there's 50 million people in this country who do not have access to healthcare because they don't have access to health insurance. So the premise of healthcare reform has a great foundation. There are things that need to be addressed along the way before 2014, but in general, you're going to find that this is very beneficial for our country.
May I just interject one thought here? When we talk about 50,000 people or 50 million people in the United States who do not have health insurance and therefore don't have coverage for health care, they do have coverage, and it's the emergency room. And that's the least efficient way of getting overall health care. It's a wonderful way if you need an emergency kind of a treatment. You need to have something sewn up or you have a heart attack and need to be taken someplace. But for many people who are uninsured, that is the only place that they can get health care because it's federally mandated that no emergency room can turn anybody down. So in one sense, we do have a universal health care plan, and it's the most expensive and the most inefficient as far as delivering total health care. Is that correct?
That's very good. You have it right on the nose. Yes, that's correct. And therefore, getting access to all those people to primary care would, in the long run, be beneficial.
Okay, so I interjected and interrupted you on that. So move forward with healthcare reform, and it's good social policy. It's going to cover most of these 50 million people who are not covered currently. And how does it work? How does it break down?
Well, healthcare reform really is going to come in I'll call two phases or two waves of changes. Many of the first phase has already been implemented. The word is that instead of we call it healthcare reform, we should be calling it health insurance reform for the first set of changes. Because what happened this year is many of the insurance reforms, such as and the highlighted ones that we hear about in the news, is pre-existing conditions, for example, where people were required to have waiting periods for or absolute denials. People were rated up for medical conditions. There's a whole set of elements that really made the insurance industry do a much better job of how they handle their risk and attract risk to their plans. And the reason no single insurance carrier could go out and do it on their own is because there's something in our business called adverse selection. And if you tried to do what was right, you would get penalized. And that sounds awful, but that's the way it works. So what the first phase of healthcare reform does is pretty much levels the playing field for all the insurance carriers to really prepare for that second phase, which is going to be very significant when it's attached to the individual mandate, which we've been reading a lot about and hearing a lot about in the news. But as of today, it's still there, and it's a very important component of healthcare reform.
So the provisions that have been instituted in this phase one prior to 2014, and we'll get into what happens in 2014, there are some things that have already been instituted, and that is the children. All children can be covered no matter what pre-existing conditions they might have. And the children can stay on their parents' plans until age 26.
Correct. Preventive care is also now provided at no cost, which means if there's an out-of-pocket, such as a copay or a deductible or coinsurance, if it's a preventive care visit, there aren't not any out-of-pocket expenses to the patient, and that's, again, to encourage them to come in, and so we can catch things early and correct them instead of waiting down the road where things can get a little out of hand and expensive, quite honestly.
So instead of going to the emergency room with the heart attack, we might have caught it up front with preventive care or screenings.
Definitely the philosophy of being able to get people in for their preventive care. And the U.S. Task Force on Preventive Health Services has it pretty well defined for all insurance carriers to provide those benefits. And again, leveling the playing field for all of us, it'll be a good thing in the long run.
And regarding the preventive care, this is one thing that I have been talking about over the past few months on this program and separately, is that preventive care covers Medicare, people on Medicare, which preventive services and screenings have never been incorporated in Medicare coverage in the past. So people on Medicare can now go to their physician and 100% covered by Medicare and no deductibles. And they can get screenings and preventive care and an annual wellness exam, which as people age, that's when the healthcare challenges increase. And this will be an opportunity to catch them early and hopefully to keep people living longer and living well and living a good quality of life because their illnesses will be checked.
Yeah, that was a very, it's one of those things in the healthcare reform world that we don't hear much about. But Medicare did get preventive services as well as some adjustments to that donut hole in what's called Medicare Part D in terms of rebates back from the federal government and some phenomenal discounts on brand name medicines that were required as part of that, which is, it gets little attention, but it was actually quite instrumental for, Medicare is the largest insurance carrier in our country, quite honestly.
It's really a remarkable benefit, and we keep hearing the criticism, oh, Medicare benefits are cut under, and they call it Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act is what the official name is of the health care reform. Medicare benefits are cut, and in actuality, they are not cut. What is being looked at more closely is the fraud and the abuse of Medicare, and they're cutting back on that. And they've already documented that they've saved considerable amount of dollars by strongly and aggressively focusing on the fraud and abuse in the system.
That is correct. There's been a lot of emphasis on fraud And not so much necessarily maybe here in Wisconsin, but in other parts of the country, there's been some fairly significant findings, which is always surprising to maybe people like myself who are naive, apparently, but why they would do that. But the fact is, there's also savings they're going to try to generate with what's called Medicare Advantage plans, or Medicare Part C is the term that's used, and in terms of controlling some of those costs. So there's a whole variety of cost savings built into healthcare reform that stretches for 10 years, so it's not all at one point in time. And it isn't necessarily changing benefits. It's really changing some of the financing and doing the encouragements of things such as preventive care, like you just mentioned, Carol.
Well, I think prevention, and before we go to break, our guest today, by the way, is Alan Waring, and Alan is with Group Health Cooperative South Central Wisconsin, and we're talking about healthcare reform and the affordable care legislation that was signed into law in 2010 by President Obama. And it just makes common sense to me that if we can catch things early, that if we focus on prevention and screenings, or at least move in that direction, rather than doing the heroics at the end when the problems really are exacerbated and it's too late to correct some concerns or some health issues, that not only will costs eventually be decreased, because it costs less to treat people or to take care of people when they're not dramatically ill, not only will the costs decrease, but so will the quality of life increase. And that's just as important, to have the increased quality of life and having wellness in our community.
Absolutely. In fact, I was talking to somebody the other day. They said they're looking for the magic pill or whatever that gets you to live to 100 and then you die right away.
So yeah,
you don't have to go through the end of life deterioration, so to speak.
The older I get,
find that.
The older I get, when I hear people doing what they love doing and they're just full of passion and pursuing something, and then they don't wake up the next morning, or they drop dead on the spot or whatever. What a gift to a good life. What a gift.
Absolutely.
Welcome back to our program. Our guest today is Alan Waring, who's sales and marketing director of Group Health Cooperative, South Central Wisconsin. And we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, health care reform, the new legislation that was signed into law. And now it's in front of the Supreme Court. And I think what they're really looking at, Alan, from what I can determine with the early news reports on it, is this individual mandate component of the law and whether that's unconstitutional or not. And there are lots of legal thoughts on both sides of that issue. Some people say that, well, it's merely a tax and there's plenty of precedents for that. And others say you can't force people to purchase something in the United States and America if they don't want to do it. So how do you think that's going to go?
You know, it's interesting because the Obama administration just this week has elected to send it to the Supreme Court. So in one respect, you would view that as the administration feeling pretty confident that they're going to get the support of the Supreme Court. I do have to say, from the insurance industry standpoint, the individual mandate is a very important component of healthcare reform. And we mentioned in a previous segment about a number of phases for healthcare reform. And the next phase really is what we'll call phase two, which is really going to roll out in 2014, which is when the individual mandate becomes a very critical element of that. And a reason, there's a corollary to individual mandate, and that is the insurance company is going to have to do something that's called guarantee issue. And I agree that, again, this is one of those things that I think is probably great social policy. And what that means is, if somebody applies for coverage with anybody, whether it's Aetna, Blue Cross, Group Health, Dean, P+, Unity, any of us in town here, we're going to have to take them. But the offset was that everybody has to be insured, because if you don't want to buy insurance until you need it, that's going to cause a great deal of expense added to the system we're not ready for. And sometimes when I have to give presentations, I'll use a very personal experience that, my wife and I had a fire in our house a couple of winters ago. And when we were sitting in the driveway with the firefighters watching our house go up in smoke, that would not have been the time for us to pick up the phone and call State Farm or whatever and say, I think I need some insurance now.
Well, right.
Without the individual mandate, that's what could happen. That's why it is a very key critical component of healthcare reform. And so the direction of the whole Accountable Care Act is probably dependent on that, and that's why it's such a fundamental issue. It's going to be debated and probably addressed in the Supreme Court in current session.
Yes, I think they're going to move quickly on it.
Yeah.
And, to coin a legal phrase, the jury is still out on what is going to happen. But with health care, one of the things about health care, nobody is excluded from the potential for needing health care. You never know whether you're going to be in an accident, whether you wake up the next day and you have an illness. You just never know, and nobody gets out of this life alive. So there is, seems to me, 100% need or the potential need for health care across the board for everybody. So,
correct. And part of the legislation is designed to make it easier for all of us to obtain coverage as well. Today, most of us obtain coverage through our employer, or there is a fairly robust individual market as well. But majority of our patients, of our members, really in access to the system through their employer. And what they're going to do in 2014, and the Office of Free Market Healthcare over at the state here in Wisconsin is developing what's called a health insurance exchange. And the design of the exchange is to help all of us go into a online supermarket. We like to refer to it as Travelocity, but it's probably not quite along those lines. I like to use the example of the cereal aisle over at the grocery store. When you walk down a cereal aisle, there is lots of varieties and lots of choices based on what you need, what your family needs, what your children need. And today, it's kind of a one-size-fits-all. Your employer decides for you, and everybody has to have that. The concept of health care reform, in addition to creating the individual mandate and a guarantee issue of service, is really choice. And quite frankly, today, a lot of the individual employees don't have the type of choice that's going to be available to them in 2014, including choice of prices. How much does somebody want to pay, or how much out of pocket would they think they absorb? And it's going to be a lot what some view as a very vibrant marketplace to develop and allow all of us to purchase our health insurance, and it'll be portable. You'll take it with you rather than when you leave your job, or the other way around, when you lose your job. You'll still be able to maintain your health insurance, because as the first level of the exchange is going to also determine whether you have are you eligible for any kind of government subsidies or tax breaks to afford your insurance, because there is something called the affordable part of the Affordable Care Act. And there are going to be some filters built in to say, here's how much you'll be subsidized by the government, and here's how much is your benefit. And it's all going to be calculated. It's a lot of work that has to be done before 2014 for the state of Wisconsin, as well as insurance companies, to kind of integrate into the exchange.
A couple of things regarding these exchanges. The insurance companies who are in the exchanges do have to meet certain criteria, do they not? They have to there's going to be a baseline of benefits that are required to be included in any coverage that they offer. And then the coverage has to be 80 to 85% of the premium dollars have to actually be spent on health care and not administrative costs, which, for the high yeah. dollars that go to CEOs and all of
right.
the administrators.
Carol's really well versed on this healthcare reform thing. I'm very impressed.
Thank you. I followed it a lot.
There's two elements there. The one thing about the 85% that you've mentioned is really related to what's called, in our industry, it's called a medical loss ratio. And that says, here's how many dollars that have to be spent on delivering medical care versus administrative costs, and depending on where all those go. And there's been a lot of criticism about CEOs making a lot of money, but when it really comes down to it,
they have made a lot of money.
It isn't always right, and I completely agree, but it's really not the issue with healthcare reform. The issue is that 85% that's going to medical costs, and how fast is that going up? So, but again, here in Madison in particular, we all monitor each other because it's all public record, and people get value for their medical care here in Madison. All four of the health plans in particular run around a 90% loss ratio right now, which means 90% of the premium dollars they collect go back to delivering care. Now, that isn't true in other parts of the country,
right,
where this legislation is going after, and rightfully so. But here in Madison, we really do get a good value, and not just from Group Health Cooperative. Quite frankly, I have very good competitors in town here,
mm-hmm.
and they do the same. So it's very well taken care of in that regard.
As I said at the beginning of the program, we're an island here of excellence in cost containment, in healthcare delivery, in the concern for the patient. And so Group Health Cooperative, certainly in Madison, doesn't stand alone in that area.
No, I completely agree.
But your point is that's not the case in all areas of the country, and that's what's driving up costs. And one thing regarding the coverage, we talked about the uninsured, and they go to an emergency room, and that's covered. Well, aren't individual premiums that we pay now, aren't they increased slightly to cover the costs of the uninsured in emergency rooms because they have no coverage?
That's very good. This is something that's referred to as the cost shift. And the cost shift works and not only for emergency room, but quite frankly, some of the proponents that Medicare is more efficient or better than private health insurance. Well, what happens is Medicare also pays short to the hospital systems, and they have to essentially come back to the commercial market to make up for those differences. And so there's a huge cost shift across the board. Using emergency rooms for uninsured is certainly a component of that, as well as the underpayments from Medicare that create the necessity to build a commercial. So we are paying for that, absolutely. The other thing you mentioned before, which was the qualified health plans within the exchanges. Very good question, because the legislation clearly identifies, and this is the difference between the 85% medical loss ratio you mentioned, and what's going to be referred to as essential benefits. And in fact, hopefully it'll come out with the essential benefits legislation is supposed to be released on October 7th. So within the next week, we should be getting a definition of what essential benefits are for the exchanges. And within the exchanges, there are going to be four levels that have been defined, although the specifics of those definitions aren't mm-hmm. there yet, which will really allow members, I refer to our staff as our patients as members, to really choose which level of benefits is most accommodating, but also if an employer wants to still subsidize some of the healthcare, they can say, here, like a defined contribution, I'm going to give you this much. You can go in exchange based on the varying levels of benefits that'll be in there. Define one that fits your budget, and it's the actual specifics with a baseline level of benefits will be released on October 7th is the latest we've been hearing.
And it seems to me the employers, particularly small businesses, may be getting some assistance towards the contributions that they make towards the employees' health care benefits, whether they provide the coverage or whether they give funds to the individual employee to purchase their insurance through an individual exchange.
This will be an interesting dynamic in the whole delivery and financing of health care in the country, because employers are going to need to determine whether they want to continue to offer coverage as they do, or whether they're going to essentially wash their hands of it and send their employees in the exchange. And for employers under 50, there really aren't any, meaning 50 employees, there really are not any constraints from them in terms of tax liability or anything to do that. It'll be more a philosophical decision and what's best for their individual company to make that decision. Larger employers, there are going to be some, I'll call it, without using a better term, there may be some penalties for doing that, but they'll also be able to weigh those penalties based on how much am I paying today versus how much mm-hmm. is it worth just to pay the fine to send my employees into the exchange.
The penalty may be less than what it costs them to provide the coverage.
As it's written today, it is.
Well, we need to stop for another break. Our guest is Alan Waring, who is Sales and Marketing Director of Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin. And Alan is well-schooled in the healthcare reform legislation, the Affordable Care Act, and he's sharing his knowledge about the act with us today in very consumer-friendly terms, and you're making it very understandable. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
This segment of our program has been brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center, and you're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY, also available on carolcobyradio.com, Carol Coby, KOBYradio.com, and always available streamed live on WTDY.com. And we're talking a little bit about medicine today, but a broader scope of healthcare in general. Our guest is Alan Waring, and he is Sales and Marketing Director of Group Health Cooperative, South Central Wisconsin. And he is sharing his knowledge after, gosh, you've been in the healthcare and health insurance industry because you were with Blue Cross Blue Shield of United of Wisconsin for 30 years. So it's been, you've got to approaching 40 years in this industry.
Yeah, thanks for aging me. Yes.
Yes. Well.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I could say a few things about myself that would even push beyond that. But the healthcare reform, you are really clearing up some of the confusion about it. And one of the things you note today, in fact, I just read an article last evening about planning for retirement, and if this goes wrong, and if that goes wrong, and you get downsized early, or if your investments go south, or if your kids need help and you have all of these financial concerns. A major part of this article talked about, well, what if you lose your health insurance? And all the ways that you can zigzag around and make deals with your employer that you're not going to work for anymore, or try to find a plan. And this goes on constantly, and particularly for older workers who, if they have a healthcare issue, and most everybody does, they'll get denied insurance if they try to just apply for it because of pre-existing conditions. But individual insurance in its own right is so expensive. And so even in people looking for work today, and so many people are, one of the considerations they're taking into account is, what about health insurance? Will I get better coverage here, or will I get coverage? And I need coverage. And so many decisions that we're making in our daily lives are related to whether or not we're going to have health insurance. And the healthcare reform really removes that as an obstacle or a dilemma in making decisions that are best for us and our family. And that's my perception of it. Am I off base on that, Alan?
I think you're very correct, Carol, that what's going to happen is in a number of fronts. First of all, we have to say in Wisconsin, we are quite blessed to have a lot of options for health care, even outside employer-sponsored. Wisconsin has the second highest rate of insured residents in the country. So we have a good safety net through whether it's HRSP or some of the Badger Care programs.
HRSP being health insurance risk-sharing plan.
Thanks.
Yes,
the health insurance risk-sharing plan.
And we had that in Wisconsin before, and now the federal Affordable Care Act also provides for high-risk insurance coverage right now.
And so what's going to happen when it's guarantee issue, there's also some restrictions on the level of rating that you can use. Today, the actuaries use tables that obviously have young people have less costs and people my age have more costs, and it's sort of a curve on, and that curve can get pretty steep as I get older. Mm-hmm. And they've really, one part of legislation actually flattens that curve out, which is one of the criticisms as well, that younger people entering the insurance market may pay a little more than they would today, and then folks my age actually would probably pay less than they're paying today before they can hit Medicare at least. So there is some balancing going on as part of the health.
Well, there are other
pricing.
Insurance plans that work the same way for other aspects of life. If you buy a life insurance plan, for example, that isn't a graduated term policy, it's the same thing.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And they
so it's
rate
nothing
you
new.
If you say you jump out of airplanes, your rate's going to be different than if you don't. So
right.
Exactly.
Now, one of the things that Group Health Cooperative did was, besides trying to understand the legislation yourself and how it impacts you, but you actually wanted to know what your members feel about it and what questions they have, their concerns, and how they feel about it. So you held focus groups. And what did you learn from those focus groups?
Actually, we found some of those very interesting on a number of fronts. First of all, we have, in addition to our board being members, we have a member advisory committee as well of members, and we polled them. And we actually did some outreach to the community and did focus groups. And it weren't all just GHC members. There were lots of different carriers represented in the discussions. And what we learned was when we talk about quality, it isn't really necessarily in our industry, at least we talk about quality. It's not. I'm not sure we've done a good job of translating that to the individual members. So what we learned is, and you just caught me a few minutes ago, Carol, on the HRSE acronym, we also learned that we kind of live in a paternalistic area where our employers decide for us what kind of benefits what, and they pay the premium or majority of the premium, and we don't really know how much it really costs. And it became a little frightening as we asked what kind of price points you'd be willing to pay if you had to go to the exchange and purchase it on your own. The average consumer probably would pay about a third of what the actual cost is right now, which tells us, you know, we have to develop benefit programs to really correspond with that, because that's what they're going to be willing to pay. And we don't want everybody to get sticker shock when they mm-hmm. when they have to start buying on their own, recognizing there'll be elements of subsidies, whether it's from their employer or from the government. But it was still an overwhelming surprise at the lack of understanding of the cost of health care, as well as some of our terminology. When people start talking about deductibles and co-pays and co-insurances, out-of-pockets, people really get confused.
And they get suspicious.
Absolutely, and rightly so, when it's something you're not that familiar with. So mm-hmm. we recognize that there's going to have to be a significant education process, not necessarily from group health, but from our entire industry, mm-hmm. to make sure when we make this transition that people have a fair opportunity to understand what they're looking at and make some changes. There is some.
I offer this program as a catalyst for that,
perfect.
By the way.
Well, there is one part of the legislation that's in process right now also that, you know, we all have our benefit summaries and things that we use for people to evaluate your benefits. Well, there's going to be a standardized format as part of healthcare reform that's going to have to be available for the exchange. So you can kind of look at apples-apples comparison of what you're actually looking at and look at the price. Again, should we have done it as an industry ourselves? Probably, but this kind of, again, it's a good thing that there's mm-hmm. sort of being forced to do that, because in that new world, it's going to be very, what I'll call consumer-driven. The consumer is going to have a lot more input into the decisions they make regarding their healthcare. And so we have to put as many things in place to help them with that. And that was probably one of the most surprising things we learned in that process, that we're so used to our employer just handing it to us and saying, here's what it is. The mechanics behind it weren't that familiar. And we you know, some of our folks in the focus group were some fairly well-educated people. And we're going, yeah. You know, it's sort of been handed down to us for years. And
well,
we're
and
just used
sometimes
to it.
People never get a bill. You know, they get something that says this is not a bill.
Yeah, the explanation of benefits comes. Correct?
Right, but there is no real bill and there's no real understanding of the costs. So that
exactly.
The clarification of costs and a better understanding of that. And maybe people then can look at, well, if we can do this a little bit differently, if I do this a little differently in my own lifestyle, perhaps we can collectively and individually bring down some costs too.
Yeah, absolutely. And things such as quality, they
yeah, quality of care was a major concern for them.
Access to their provider was quality. It was spending enough time with them. The criticism was, you know, I get about 8 minutes in there with them. And so those kind of things and hours being accessible. Because if you work 9 to 5, you know, I don't want to have to go to clinic at 10:30. So things of that nature came out pretty clear, and it's going to help all of us adapt down the road to become, you know, as we say, more consumer oriented.
Well, one of the concerns and the criticisms, and people are projecting their vision, envisioning standing in line and waiting 6 months to get into the doctor for certain things, and actually, if you call now for something that's not an emergency, it could be 3 to 4 months down the road before you can get into a doctor too. But what about those concerns of not getting care? Does healthcare reform, will that make that actually come true? That they will have to wait excessively to see a doctor? Is there anything built into that legislation that suggests that?
There, it's a good question, because the only evidence we have is the state of Massachusetts did a universal health care coverage in their state on a state basis about 4 years ago, and that very thing happened. But the wait times for primary care skyrocketed, And there is some legislation in terms of training through medical schools, but you got to recognize that kicks in now. You know, that's 8 years down the road to create incentives for physicians to enter family practice. And some of it is doing community-based, like Access Community Health Center type programs or rural programs as a as really a, the government pays back some of your student loans for going through medical school. But in the short term, that could be a problem. We haven't really addressed that yet. And I'm not so sure with, again, with the pattern of putting incentives in now, encouraging medical students to go into family practice. And quite frankly, the financial rewards are much greater in specialty care, as I think we all know.
And so but there's a certain have to, personality that doesn't, there is a personality that wants to really care and just be the first line access to people.
Absolutely. In fact, we find, I mean, what the uniqueness of group health cooperatives, we deliver primary care and we essentially use the other systems in town for specialty services.
And your physicians are on salary.
That's correct. And our physicians embrace this type of care in terms of how we deliver care at group health cooperative.
And you've received these two national awards of being amongst the tops in the country.
Yes. And because our physicians are incented to deliver outcomes, we can monitor them by their patient block, how well their quality is. And if you encourage them to do that, you find out in aggregate, you get to be number 7 in the country.
We're going to stop for our final break, and we'll be back for our last few minutes with Alan Waring, who is with Group Health Cooperative South Central Wisconsin. We're talking about healthcare reform legislation and what this is going to mean for the healthcare industry and for all of us individually as we pursue our goal of having healthy, long, and well lives. And wellness is more than just the absence of disease. Welcome back. This hour has just flown by with Alan Waring, who is with Group Health Cooperative South Central Wisconsin. And congratulations again to Group Health for two major national awards for their quality of care and their excellence in IT. At the same time, using medical records as a way to have instantaneous contact for what's important to know about their patients. We are talking about the legislation and touched on, before our last break, the concept of the care, the access to care and quality care that patients and that your members have told you in focus groups that they would like to have. What about this idea of rewarding outcomes versus procedures? Is that going to be what evolves from this healthcare reform legislation?
Carol, I actually think it's going to have to because the way we reimburse our medical community today probably isn't sustainable into the future. And that's why we see employers in particular really adding very aggressively a great deal of wellness programs because they understand that the only way they're going to control their costs is to get their employees very well. And again, in Madison, you know, for some of the employer groups we work with, there's a remarkable amount of activity going on that encourages improving their lifestyles because without going into a lot of detail, you know, there's studies out there that say 60% of hospital admissions are there because of things we choose to do from a lifestyle basis. And those are could be unnecessary if we all embrace the whole concept of taking care of ourselves instead of waiting until something happens and then hopefully a pill is going to take care of it for me.
Well, one of those things, falls, the senior community and the amount of falls and what that does regarding their health. And it just puts them on a deteriorating scale. United Way and one of this program sponsors, Home Health United, is working directly with the senior population and with all kinds of organizations that serve them to prevent falls. And if we can prevent falls in seniors, we can prevent a whole lot of hospital admissions and other complicated health issues that arise because of the falls. So that's just one issue. Mm. I was talking to somebody from a company yesterday, and they're so proud that they've instituted a Biggest Loser contest. You know, there's a lot of takeoff from the television programs and getting ideas and incorporating them in the workplace or in groups that we associate with. And they were so proud. They've already lost cumulatively 150 pounds. And so there are things like that going on. People are rising to the occasion. And of course, Michelle Obama has her vegetable garden, mm-hmm. and kids are planting vegetables, and we're getting more of these community gardens where kids can actually participate. Some young children have never seen vegetables grow in the ground. And so I think these things are already starting.
Oh, absolutely. We have one of our customers who has, because the individuals didn't want to report their weight, they have these large industrial scales. So their Biggest Loser contest is done by 15 people on a team, and they all get on this big industrial scale together, and they get their total weight. And then the game is, their team has to lose a certain level of weight. And
that's a good way to
do it. Don't have to embarrass yourselves of what your weight is.
Yeah, I think I would not sign up right away for that contest. That I don't want anybody to put me on the scale in front of other people. But anyway, we're running out of time here. I want to ask you, this seems to me that there's a whole lot of partnerships necessary to make this healthcare reform successful. And we as individuals and patients and members of the community are really important partners in this whole process. We have to, number one, expect that there's going to be a little bit of confusion as all of this plays out and gets put in place, so it's not going to be all perfect. And secondly, there's a lot that we can do in our own choices and lifestyle to be healthy and to increase wellness in this country.
Absolutely. I think that's where it's going to have to occur, because the level of the GDP that's associated with healthcare probably is going to have to be fixed somehow.
We have, you have several references that people can turn to get accurate information on healthcare. We all have been inundated with emails that say outrageous things. I have just one word of advice to everybody. Do not believe the sensational outrageous emails. Go to credible sources, and I will post all of those sources on carolcobyradio.com when I post this program next week. So go to carolcobyradio.com, and you'll see a number of sources that you can turn to for accurate information on healthcare reform. Thank you so much, Alan Waring, for being here. Thank you for listening to All About Living.